Welcome, everybody. We invite you to pull up a chair, kick off your shoes, and listen to some great sales stories. With that pilgrim on the 405, your personal pilgrim, Will Crist, as he wanders up and down the world in search of the latest techniques and technologies that will let you blaze new trails in today's new world of sales. It all starts right now with your own personal guide, Will Crist, and here he is.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks on the end of June. You know, senior managers in Orange County companies are lifting their face from the day-to-day struggles for survival. They're beginning to look to the future, asking questions like, what will we look like 3 to 5 years from now? How much market share will we be able to pick up in the next 18 months? What sort of headcount will we need to service our current customers and the new customers we'll gain as we increase our market share? How do we grow without requiring large capital expenditures? The fact that people are asking these questions are signs of the changing marketplace. Spring is coming. Well, maybe it's not here yet, but people are getting ready. Now, there's companies in Orange County that have gone from hundreds of employees to less than 20. How do they compete in the marketplace? What strategy will they use to regain their momentum? Many of these companies have the reputation of industry leaders. Highest levels. They can sell globally. And yet, because of the dislocation in the marketplace, they are now much smaller. But the ones who are thriving are more nimble. They have great strategies for looking at how to increase their market share. They're looking at different ways of selling. They're looking at different ways of delivering their product. Along with the change in the economy, there's been a dramatic change in the way that we communicate, the way that we use the internet, the way that we become much more productive, not only at manufacturing levels, but at the highest levels of companies. Now, some of the places that I've discovered wonderful strategies, great technologies, and increased productivity are in companies along the 405 up and down in Orange County, because this is a hotbed of creativity. People are here because they want to be here, and they are determined to make their businesses successful. Now, one of the people that I've been very fascinated with is Steve Ormond from Focus 360. I wanted to bring Steve on and get him to tell us a little bit about what his company does, what the effect of the displacement of the economy has been, and some of the plans that he has for the future. So welcome, Steve, to the Pilgrim Talks.
Thank you, Will.
Tell us a little bit about Focus 360. What does your company do for customers?
Well, Focus 360 creates images using digital technology for the real estate development industry. And the images that we create are used for planning, approval, government agency approvals, as well as sales and marketing. And they come in a variety of flavors. Probably the most popular today is still images, better known as renderings or illustrations, as well as computer animations, which are similar to short films, all digitally created using similar technology that Hollywood uses for movies and special effects.
Now, you must have seen a dramatic change in your business, given that it's so real estate centric.
You are absolutely right, Will. With the real estate development spigot virtually turning off back in 07, 08, we saw a tremendous drop in our sales, on an order of magnitude of 80% drop.
That sounds like that's catastrophic.
You know, I believe that Focus 360 is very blessed to still be in business, frankly. We have a great team, great leadership, and a great following in the clientele that we've had over the past 20 years. And through some quick changes in plans and some diversification in the type of companies and products and projects that we worked on, we were able to survive. And I don't think we're out of the woods yet, but we're definitely a survivor.
So tell us a little bit about how you got into this business.
Well, as I mentioned, we've been doing this for well over 20 years, and I initially got into the business kind of as a fluke. My background's in architecture, and in my early 20s, I was working for an architect doing 3D CAD for restaurant hotel design, and it was at that time that I recognized an opportunity to leverage 3D imagery in new home sales. I noticed a lot of home builders that were attempting to sell during that late 80s hot market from plans. They had nothing for people to actually walk through like we're used to in Orange County, model homes and such. So I came up with the concept for using that 3D technology to create virtual model homes, and continued to refine it and get a few clients here and there. And over the years, that blossomed into covering everything from high-rise condos to master plan communities to bridges and highways.
Well, that sounds like a pretty comprehensive coverage of construction.
Yeah, you know, the portions of our business that are related to public works have really grown over the last year and a half, 2 years, primarily because of necessity. When the residential market was going gangbusters, we became virtually a residential company. 80% of our business then was in the residential sector, not by plan, just because our clients were demanding more and more of our business as they were attempting to grow their home building businesses. So not necessarily a strategy we would have liked to have taken, but it allowed us to do some pretty significant growth and bring on some very talented people and create some award-winning imagery. So it was the timing worked for us, but as I said, as the market began to transition, we had to transition with it, which is where the diversity in the types of work really kicked into high gear.
I like that phrase, the economy is transitioning. It's transitioning again, right?
You know, it's still in transition. I think a lot of people think it's still in neutral.
When you started, were you regional, local, global?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, our roots are definitely here in Orange County. Most of our clientele was based in Orange County. Some of them were doing work outside of the OC, if you will, Inland Empire, San Diego, LA Ventura. But you know, since we were the first company in the country, and as far as we know in the world, to produce a virtual model home for home builders, it became a kind of a great poster child for what technology could do for folks. And as such, we were written up in a number of newspapers and magazines, you know, the cover of Builder Magazine, the Wall Street Journal, local ABC News did stories on our software. And that just garnered a lot of publicity, which then spread the news on what we're doing. And next thing you know, we're doing work on an international level.
Mm. And how far has this gone internationally?
Well, in the early days, when there was little competition, we were doing work in Australia and in over in Asia. Not a ton of work, honestly. It was you know, like onesie twosie types of projects that were happening overseas. Still, most of our work was coming from the Southwest. But as the market changed, we're seeing a lot more of our work happening, you know, definitely in Australia and the Middle East, North Africa, even some work in, and we did a little project in Newfoundland, a little project in Korea. So, you know, it's kind of a smattering of all over the world. And if I was to run a report now, I'd probably see that still the majority of the number of projects we do is here in the Southwest. But dollar volume, we're getting a lot of larger projects from the Middle East, especially.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the recent transition in the economy, how did that affect your company? What sorts of things did you have to do differently?
Oh boy, do we have to talk about that? Well, I already mentioned the volume change, and you know, having the majority of our staff based here in Laguna Niguel. We were forced to make the tough decisions to cut back our staff. And unfortunately, we had to go through a number of layoffs and see some real, you know, great people have to leave our employ. And that was tough. Those were tough times. And that was probably the biggest thing that we had to do from a dollar savings standpoint in order to keep in touch with our sales volume at the time. And then all the basics that you have to do when you're cutting back, it's almost going back into a startup mode where, you know, you cut your office space down to a fraction of what it was. And we were pretty fortunate in that we owned our building and were able to lease out a big chunk of it to help keep us in the same location. And, you know, then lose all the frills that you came accustomed to. And it's interesting as you start to talk about what you're going to do moving forward. You know, what do you need to bring back? Everyone here is working harder, working longer hours. And that's from the top down, from the ownership down to the lowest employee. We're all doing our part to keep this business moving.
But back in startup mode, huh?
That's kind of what I compare it to. You know, it really is. You know, when you're in startup mode, you're doing everything you can as lean as you possibly can. And, you know, from the amount of software that you invest in and hardware that you invest in to the people, the amount of hours they work, to the amount of money you spend in advertising and product development. And it's tough because there are a lot of opportunities right now that we'd like to take advantage of, but you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow just yet.
Now, has this changed the direction of the company? Do you still have the same mission that you had before?
The mission is virtually the same, but the way we go about reaching that goal is changed, and it'll forever be changed. There's been a lot of competition in the past few years in our space from overseas, from China and India primarily, all over the place really, but primarily from China and India, where they've really driven down the cost of our tools or the cost of the renderings and animations that we compete against. So we've had to approach that with unique and clever marketing tools to basically compete with those low prices. And Focus 360 is really known for doing a higher level of imagery, higher level of service to our clients, and we've commanded a higher price because of it. But when the market is as tough as it is now, most of our clients just don't have the budgets they used to. So coming up with an alternative Focus 360 brand was key to continue our business.
Well, now tell me a little bit about what have you done to compete with that marketplace? I mean, the number of your headcount's down. Mm-hmm. How are you able to supply to fulfill on the orders that you have?
Well, with the headcount going down, that went down because the volume of sales went down, obviously. So the way we're meeting the current volume is through the team we have left. And we have two other teams that are offshore that we've trained over the past 10 years that we're ramping up. So where we would do, let's say, the first 30% of a project offshore and then finish the project here in Laguna Niguel, now, you know, the first 50%, 70%, in some cases, you know, 100% of that work is being done offshore in order to not only meet the price expectations that the clients have for certain product levels, but also to grow the staff levels.
Now, so you're delivering the same quality that you were delivering, and a greater percentage of it's being produced offshore.
That's correct. That's correct. And there's a certain amount of our product type I mentioned when we shifted to create a second product vertical, we're calling the value line. That is not the same high quality that Focus 360 was known for, yet it's superior to most of the work coming in from offshore, from the competitors in China and in India and so on and so forth. So it's twofold. The first is that the creation of that new product line being done offshore by our team now is competing directly with these guys at a lower price point. And then the highline work that we're doing, we're having our guys do more of that work offshore as well and then getting finished here in Orange County.
Do you find yourself spending time helping the people offshore develop their skills?
Oh, absolutely. It's a requirement. You know, there are a number of companies that would love to do our work in both of those countries I mentioned and others, but they just don't have the skills at the level that we need them to be at, nor do they have our tool sets and our processes. So what we have done is that our two offshore teams have been trained by our team here in Laguna Niguel. We both sent our team overseas to train them, and we've had them come here to Laguna Niguel to be trained. And they use our processes, they use our libraries, our templates, so that it's a seamless transition when projects are going between the offices.
Uh-huh. And have you how significant has been the improvement in communication? Have you, has that been a big factor for you over the past 3 years?
It has. There's, you know, it's not like having them in the office next door, yet using things like video conferencing and obviously the internet to exchange files and to review files in real time online. That's helped significantly. We couldn't be doing this type of work at the quality level that we're doing it without the web. The web's become the backbone for all of our communication.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, it's when you're dealing with projects on the scale that we are, you know, picture we're like a virtual construction company. We have to, say, build a high-rise building. In order to build the high-rise building, we'll need one of our offshore teams to begin the infrastructure, the skeleton of that building. So files will come to us digitally from the architect generally. We will go through those files here in Orange County, clean them up, and then ship them, you know, digitally to our team, let's just say in Southeastern Europe. They will be communicating back and forth with us on the areas that need to be built, what infrastructure needs to get built, and what type of materials need to be applied, so on and so forth. And then they'll begin to give us test images of how that process is coming for our guys to be reviewing here. So when we come in the morning, there are test images waiting for us to review from the previous day in Southeast Europe. And when we get our review and comments back to them, they're able to work on them that night. If we need to have a collaboration session, we can pull them up using Skype and both do face-to-face video conversing to better explain a particular perspective. Or if we need to, we can share our desktops with one another and point to various elements within, say, the architect's drawings that need to be finer detailed or whatnot. So that collaboration that normally you'd have someone over your shoulder pointing at your screen, we're able to do now using things like Skype and desktop sharing.
Has that become second nature to you yet?
In some cases, yes, but I would say we're still not really using the full depth of those tools. I think there's still a lot more to be able to exploit, and that's part of the challenge, frankly, of where they're at with the economy and being in that quote-unquote startup mode, is that you're limited to how much money you can invest in some of the tools that would allow you, for example, to do a multi-video conferencing session, to be talking to our team in Argentina, our team in Southeast Europe, and our team here in Laguna Niguel simultaneously. We can't video conference that through Skype. You can invest in tools that allow you to do that, but in a startup mode, you deal with what you have.
All right. Good. So, getting multiple video conferencing pieces, multiple talking heads at once.
Correct.
All right. Good. Tell me a little bit, how much time do you find it's necessary to spend face to face in real time with people that you're trying to manage?
I'm sorry, Will, that you kind of broke up on that last question.
All right.
Can you repeat please?
I mean, you have people who are remote from you.
Correct.
How much time do you find that you need to spend with them in the same room? I mean, how much time do you have to spend face-to-face with them?
Face-to-face? I mean, physically face-to-face as opposed to virtually face-to-face?
Yeah.
You know, we can go days, if not weeks, without having to do a virtual face-to-face, for example, where just simple emails will suffice. But in our business, we're constantly evolving. The lighting systems that we use to make a room look realistic, the quality of a material to make it look realistic, maybe even special effects. So as we're developing new tools, new processes, to implement those with our teams overseas takes a little bit more time. So we might go 2 weeks straight where we're talking with them on a daily basis. The majority of the role in me handling mm-hmm. the stress, knowing how much I can control and can't control, and mm-hmm. Just working really hard to focus on those things that I can control and intend to let the things that I can't control take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Good. So now, what are you thinking that, when you look out at the future, do you have any idea what this transition is going to bring for your company? Do you have a kind of a timeline for what you're working on?
Well, our timeline is somewhat relevant to the market's return. And I think we all believe that the market will get better. We've been fortunate to be able to figure out how to, stay in business even at this size. So I think we're okay now. I would say we're bounced along the bottom, and we're actually seeing a fairly significant uptick in sales this last 6 months. But for planning out into the future, we're really watching the sales trends, and we're watching what's happening in the real estate industry in general. My current prediction is that we're going to be flat for at least the next 12 months. And there's opportunities to grow even in a flat market that we're perusing. For example, opening offices in other locations. Our business tends to be very relationship driven. So if we can have relationships on the ground in multiple cities, that could help us grow. And growing through improving processes and whatnot. So there are ways to grow the bottom line without necessarily having to grow the top line. And we're constantly reviewing those options. Executing on them is going to be key. So we're going to have to get our sales to bump a little bit more before we really want to begin to reinvest back in our company, whether it's in equipment or in people.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at other Orange County CEOs, other businesses in Orange County, what have you observed? How have they been dealing with with this change in economy? Have you noticed any patterns?
Well, I think the key for the companies that have been hit hard in the market is the ability to adapt. There's definitely, I have friends in industries that were barely phased, for in the security industry, for example, or even in the alcoholic beverage industry. And they were barely phased, in some cases actually grew during this downturn, and others where they were close to closing the doors, and some that actually had to close their doors, probably more of those. Mm-hmm. And the key for navigating it, if you were really being hit by this downturn, was being able to be nimble and making quick decisions. I think at the very beginning of the downturn, most of us thought that it was going to drop maybe 10%, 20%. And so we didn't cut deep enough. We weren't dramatic enough. If there's one lesson I've learned, is that you're better off working a little harder earlier on and making adjustments to things that you can learn to live without for a certain amount of time, and just doing a little bit of a deeper cut. And that would make the transition much, much easier on the rest of the company. But it's being able to, kind of read what's going on and navigate it and make quick decisions.
Now, have you found that the rest of the business community around you, that they've understood what was going on and they were willing to work with you, or was it antagonistic? What's been the climate that you've experienced with other businesses that you depend upon or that you work with?
Yeah, like our clientele, for example. I mean, most of our business is business to business. We don't rely on vendors necessarily. It's primarily our clientele. And, it's been tough on them. I feel real bad for the builders. We've seen some great companies have to close doors, like John Lang Homes, one of the premier home builder companies in Orange County. And it's been tough. I'd say the large majority of the clients we work with, or at least the people at the building industry, the building companies and the architects and developers, are no longer in those positions. Mm-hmm. Going back to that startup discussion, not only are we a startup in how we run our business, but we're almost in a startup mode for finding new clients because mm-hmm. the contacts that we had were let go.
Well, now, you know, one of the things that this radio program is about is helping business owners who listen to the show to get a sense of a positive movement forward. And one of the things that we talk to is one of the things I want people to do is pretend for a moment that you have a megaphone to talk to business owners in Orange County.
You had to come in a couple of minutes. What would you say to them?
Boy, you know, it's I would say hang in there. I think the worst is over. Still continue to plan and be nimble as best as you can. And, cash is king right now. Do everything you can to preserve your cash flow. Do everything you can to collect on your outstanding invoices and, work as best as you can with your vendors to put together preferred terms for payments and work with your banks to see if there's ways to restructure debt. But it's back to, staying alive. What do you need to do to be here when the game kicks back into high gear a year or two from now?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, this has been really, I really appreciate the time that you've spent with us. This has been, it's difficult to go through these business transitions, but what's really encouraging is to be talking to people who, are upbeat about it, who have a plan, who are executing on the plan, and who, like you, are optimistic about the future.
Well, thank you, Will. It's been a pleasure sharing with you, and it's often difficult to share the Focus 360 story without sharing our imagery because it's so much a part of our DNA. But this has been fun. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, tell us a little bit about where people can go to see some examples of the imagery that you do.
Well, they can definitely go to our website at www.focus360.com. And it's focus in the 360.com. And there they'll see a smattering of our examples. There's also our blog. I'd encourage them to sign on for our RSS feed for our blog, and where we talk about what's going on around the company and what our projects are doing. And also on Vimeo.com, there's some great examples of our more recent work on the Vimeo.com website if you just go there and search for Focus 360.
All right, so they should go to Vimeo, Vimeo.com, and search for Focus 360.
Exactly. There's also a link on our website as well to Vimeo.
And what was that website one more time?
Our website is Focus, F-O-C-U-S, 360. The number's 360.com.
Great. Well, I really appreciate you being here, Steve, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Will. I appreciate it as well.
And we'll be right back with the next guest, who is Ray Melissa from Melissa Data, after a short break.
Need to do more in less time? Losing valuable leads, prospects, or customer information by not following up properly? Or are you just starting a business and want to easily manage leads, prospects, customers, email, direct mail, and phone marketing campaigns all in one place easily? Then you need to call InfoWare. InfoWare offers the same solution that over 2.8 million business people have been successfully using for 20 years, Act by Sage. InfoWare has been helping businesses get their act together since 1993 with their team of Act-certified consultants and business systems professionals who are dedicated in helping make your business perform. Call InfoWare at 877-TECH-SOLUTIONS. That's 877-832-4765, or visit myinfoware.com today. Drop by the LA Mixer for a demo and register for a free copy of ACT to be given away every hour. Member of the BBB and authorized by Dell, Sage, Microsoft, QuickBooks, and more.
Visit us at LA's largest mixer, July 23rd at the Shrine Auditorium Expo Center. For details, log on to lamixer.com.
And now back to the wanderings of your personal pilgrim on the 405, Will Crist.
Well, one of the things that businesses always need is data. They need information on companies, on contacts, on people. And whether you're a B2C company or a B2B company, the quality of your data has something to do with the quality of your processes, of your sales, and of your ability to fulfill on your promises. And there's lots of national companies that come across my desk, sometimes on a weekly basis, offering their data to me. And little did I know, great surprise, that in our own backyard, we have a great source of data. Now, I know that he didn't start from a garage, but it was the idea of one Raymond Melissa to begin to put together a tremendous database of information and mailing processes. And as I began to learn more about Melissa Data, I became more and more fascinated and just in awe of all the things that they do over there. So I want to bring Ray on to talk a little bit about Melissa Data. So welcome to Pilgrim Talks, Ray.
Hi, Will.
So tell us a little bit about tell us about how you got started. I know it wasn't in a garage, but it tell us a little bit about Melissa Data.
I started the company 25 years ago. I had sold another company and was on a hiatus, sabbatical between companies, and thought I would start doing something with this PC I had bought at the time, and found out that there was all this data available that you could get from the federal government. And interestingly enough, is the federal government does not copyright data. So for the most part, they don't own the data. They just collect it at taxpayer expense. And you can take the data and use it and resell it if you're able to, and not have to pay royalties. I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. And this led me in a number of directions, and I wound up putting together lots and lots of data. At the time, I sold it on floppy disk, which was the media at the time. But as years have gone by, we've changed now, and most of our data is just downloadable.
Didn't you start off putting together like zip codes or something like that?
Yeah, I'd gotten data from the Census Bureau and from several other government agencies, and then one I got data from was the post office. And at the time, the data was only available on 9-track magnetic tape, which is a media that's long since gone. But I converted that data from this magnetic media onto floppy disk and start selling it that way. And it turned out to be, interestingly enough, the most popular data set that I had.
Uh-huh. Tell us the story about how you put out volume 2.
Well, as I was selling it, after I was, and I just took out little ads in popular magazines, technical magazines, and I started selling it, and people were buying it from me. And then one day a customer asked me, after I'd been in business for about 6 months, called me up and said, I bought this data from you. And I thought, uh-oh. And he says, I need an update on it. And I said, sure, I'd be glad to get you that. And that changed everything. I then realized that this data had a life of its own, that you could continue selling updates to customers. And I've got customers I've been selling updates to for the last 20-some years.
All from a couple of floppy disks with zip code data on it. That's amazing. So tell me a little bit about what the internet has meant to your business.
Well, the internet means that that a lot more people are involved with customer data now, prospect data, etc. From your website, you gather up a lot of information. You know, when people come to it, there's just a whole transaction of you know, going on out there where people collect up a lot more data than they used to. And that has meant for us that data tends to get old. Customer names and addresses, customers, 17% of the people move every year. Phone numbers change, email addresses change, etc. And our job is to help you with that whole problem. One, to make sure that you get good data to begin with. And then after you've had it for a while, to make sure that it's current. And that's been our job now for the last 20 some years.
Now, tell me a little bit, when we talked together, it seemed to be pretty clear to me that a business owner could save money by using your services.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what we enable businesses to do, whether they're business-to-business companies or if they're business-to-consumer companies, is we have mailing list, you know, broken down by those by various different categories. We also have email list. We can append phone numbers to existing lists or emails to existing lists. What this enables a company to do is to stay in touch with customers, contact them easily, and constantly stay with them.
Now, you had some particularly interesting techniques for reducing the cost of. I mean, I understand the cost of mail is going up again in the fall, but you've got some techniques for helping people reduce that cost. Is that right?
Yeah, we have a program that we've sold for a number of years now called Mailers Plus 4. And what that program does is it takes a mailing list and goes through and verifies all of the addresses on the mailing list and makes sure it's a address that's deliverable by the post office. In addition, it puts on the Plus 4 code and just generally cleans up the address. The other things that it does is it sorts them the way the post office wants it. Plus, it prints out all the documentation that you need to take this bulk mailing. And yeah, bulk mailing is defined as 200 pieces or more. Most of our customers mail into the thousands at a time. But if you do all these things the way the post office wants, they give you great discounts on bulk mailing. And that's what our program does. It actually enables you to get those great discounts that the post office offers.
So in addition to getting additional data to communicate with customers or prospects, somebody using your services can also reduce the cost that they have. I would assume that since, what did you say, how many people move every year?
About 17% of the population actually moves it each year. And these are numbers that we get from the post office. We actually are a licensee of what they call their national change of address data file. So each week we get all the moves in the country for people that have filed a change of address, and then we process files for that so that we can update customer files with the new address for either for businesses, for individuals, or families.
And if I am sending out thousands of pieces of mail and 17% of those are moving every year, then I'm going to get a certain number of those that are going to come back to me, and I have to pay for those, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's expensive, too. You pay for the postage and you pay for the return. Actually, the post office is getting tougher now. They're insisting that you check your mailing list before you mail against this national change of address process that we have, and there's other companies that provide it too, so that they have a less and less return mail that they have to deal with.
So companies that are looking to cut their costs should be talking to you to make sure that they have, number one, the best database that they can get, number two, that it's most current, that it's correct. Number three, that it's organized in such a way to get the least expensive mailing rate. And the number four, they're going to minimize the number of returns. So that could be substantial savings for a company, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We estimate you can save up to 65% of the cost of your mailing by doing all these things properly.
Well, I think that's pretty significant for any company that's doing any mailing at all. Tell me about what's happening. It looks to me like we're getting less mail. At least I'm getting less mail in my mailbox now. Is that true around the country?
Yeah, the post office mail volume is down about 15% over the last few years. And unfortunately, they have a lot of fixed costs, the USPS does. With all of the facilities they have around the country, et cetera. So they're, And they're competing with email now, which is free. And so they're having a tougher and tougher time. So that's forcing them to have to raise rates to cover their fixed costs. So consequently, they're really caught in a bind. And on top of that, they have problems with Congress. Congress is resisting them going to delivering mail only 5 days a week instead of the current six. Congress is resisting them closing a lot of the rural post offices that are expensive to keep up and are not as efficient as the city ones. So it's tough. The post office is in just a difficult situation that doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon.
What do you see ahead for data in an internet world?
A lot of our customers are, you know, because of the cost of mailing, are looking at email, obviously, now. So they're getting from their prospects and customers their email addresses, and they use programs like Constant Contact is a very popular one. There's a number of others out there that can help businesses, you know, stay in touch with their customers and prospects through email. And then if they're you know, looking for that kind of thing, especially in a local area, we can help. We have millions and millions of names and addresses and emails that make it much easier and less costly to contact people in a local area.
Wow, that's amazing. It wasn't too long ago that it was very difficult to buy lists of emails.
Yeah, it's changed tremendously in the last few years, and it's a good way. We work with a number of restaurants and local businesses that have significantly increased their business by using emails and not spam, like, you know, sending out an occasional notice and letting people know that they have coupons or they have a special event coming up. And their customers love it. It's mm-hmm. a good way to stay in touch with people in a local area.
So how has your business fared over the last 3 years?
Business for us overall has been up a little, but it used to grow at a great rate up until a few years ago. But with the downturn in the post office and all, our business is running flat to slightly positive for the last couple mm-hmm. of years.
So you hadn't had to lay off people?
No, fortunately not. You know, so far it's been going well, and this year looks like it'll be fairly good.
Tell me about competition. How is your data? Why is your data better than somebody else's data?
We spend a lot of time cleaning it, staying on top of it. You're working with it, you're verifying it. That's our whole business. That's the only thing that we do. And we've gotten quite good at it. We work with other companies to cross-check our results. And in the end, it's our customers that tell us if we're doing a good job or not. And so far, we seem to be doing great by them.
Now, one of the things I found fascinating was this page that you have. Tell me about this page for free ups.
On our website, if you go to Melissa Data, it's like a girl's first name, Melissa data.com, you'll see at the top there's a button that says lookups. And lookups started out with one simple one that we were showing people how they could use our zip code lookup and put in an address and get the correct nine-digit zip code for that address and correct it if there were problems with it, et cetera. And we found that we're getting lots and lots of people using that. And in talking to some of them, they say, oh, no, we're just looking up, you know, making sure that these addresses are valid that we're mailing to. So from that, we've added a number of other free lookups on there. You can look up street names anywhere in the country. You can look up house numbers, and you know, that's an unusual way to do it. You can put in 123 and in zip code 92612, for instance, and find out what houses have that number. And these kind of tools are very helpful in trying to sort out an address that might be handwritten and difficult to read, and that sort of thing. We can give you the We have over 40 different free lookups. You can look up nonprofit organizations. I have to bring it up on the screen here just to go over them. But they're very popular. We get over 30,000 people a day come to our website to use our free lookups.
30,000 people a day?
Yeah, day in and day out. It's amazing. And they tell us the same thing, that they're extremely useful, things that they don't find anywhere else on the internet. And these all tie into data, to property addresses, to emails, et cetera. All these things, you know, revolve around addresses.
Well, that brings to mind one of the parts of marketing in this new world has something to do with giving things away for free. And if you're getting 30,000 hits a day because you're giving something away free, those aren't all brand new people. Those are people who are coming back regularly to that site, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Probably over half of them, maybe two-thirds of them are actually regulars. Although we get a lot of new people each day. There's a book out that I read that really helped me with this by a fellow I believe named Chris Anderson. It was called something like Free the I forget the rest of the title, but it was talked about this whole model of offering free things on the internet to attract people, and then have a mechanism in there for some of the premium parts of your service that you charge for that. So the majority of people get it free, a few people pay for the service to support everyone else, and that's basically what we do. It's a great model.
And that must be a source of new prospects for you.
Well, of course, we put a simple advertisement on each page when a customer does a lookup. So if you type in a zip code, for instance, and gives you the information about that zip code, there's one single ad on there, which is only for our products. We only advertise our own products. And if users find that interesting, they click on it and it takes them to the appropriate page in our website. And we generate lots of sales leads this way each day.
Well, I'm familiar with that book by Chris Anderson called, I think it's called Free, How Today's Smartest Businesses Profit by Giving Something for Nothing.
Right, exactly.
Now, was there any other place in your business that you made use of that idea of giving something away for free?
We tried with our programs. Most of our programs, we let people try them, typically for 30 days. And this gives them a chance to see if it works in their application and helps them out. And if it doesn't, there's no cost, to the user. And we found this was a great model because our programs and tools, et cetera, are fairly technical and quite honestly, they don't work for everyone. So this gives the users a chance to see if they work for them. And we find that most people, this makes the purchasing cycle, easy for them to do it this way.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that in many ways you're very customer-centric in terms of creating sets of data specifically for the needs that your customers have.
Yeah, we try to listen to customers. We have it. That was one of the things I did on the website fairly early on. We asked people almost on every page on our website is how can we improve this page, this free lookup, the information that we have here, and we get a number of comments that come back, and typically when you see the same comment twice, two or more times, it says that there's a problem there, that something should be improved or corrected, et cetera. And we take action on all of those that we can. And I found that a lot of people just don't ask on their website. They don't ask users of the website, what can they do to make it better? And boy, they're the best people to ask.
That's wonderful. Now, another element that I've been hearing in talking to businesses that were doing well in Orange County is that they tend to leverage the expertise of others. Are there places where you feel like you don't have to create a whole new system ground up, that you can leverage the expertise of other people in the marketplace who may be you know, world class?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, there are lots of resources out there, and it pays to look into it. You know, we use the Google stuff. You know, their mapping stuff. We use that. There's a number of resources out there, and we certainly don't try to reinvent any of this ourselves. If we can find it somewhere on the internet or in the technology space.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. And now, what have you observed? Did you grow up in Southern California?
Yeah, Inglewood area.
All right. So what have you seen? What have you seen change since you were a kid?
Oh, it's got more and more crowded as time has gone on. Yeah, moved from the city area out to the suburbs. You know, the company Melissa Data, we're out in Rancho Santa Margarita now. Pretty area, nice here, but it's clearly gotten more crowded as the years have gone by. Still a wonderful place to be, though. I've traveled a lot for business and for pleasure. It's hard to beat Southern California. It is just a wonderful place.
Well, that's great. Now, tell me, if you had a chance to talk to business owners in Orange County, you had a minute or so, what would you tell them?
What would I tell them? I would tell them that, you know, that we're here, we're a resource that they can use if they want to improve their sales. You know, we're here to help them. We have a number of different programs, tools, and services, and we'd be glad to work with them. And there's no cost if we can't help them. It wouldn't cost them anything at all. So we look forward to working with you.
Well, that's great. And they can tell us your website again.
It's Melissa Data, that's M-E-L-I-S-S-A, data, D-A-T-A, .com. And you'll find an interesting site to look over. And if you do get a chance to go there, do go to the free lookups page. It's fun. It's a fun thing to play with.
Super. Ray, this has been really fun. I really do appreciate you taking time from your busy day to you know, to talk a little bit about your business and tell us some of the things that you can do to help other businesses in Orange County thrive. So thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome, Will. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, as we continue to take a look at Orange County businesses, what seems to be very clear is that CEOs of businesses in Orange County, not unlike CEOs of businesses in other places, are concerned about four things. Number one, how do I decrease my costs? Number two, how do I increase my revenue? Number three, how do I always be happy, productive, and working for me rather than the competition? And four, how do I keep my current customers happy so that I can retain them longer? Now, those are four things that I'm asking CEOs about how they can help other CEOs in this economy. Ray just gave us some great examples of how he reduced costs by organizing mailings, by getting databases clean. He's telling also how we can increase sales by using current technology, using email, constant contact, other ways of contacting prospects and customers and helping them to stay on board with us. We have tremendous resources in Orange County. Part of what's always fun and delightful to me is to come to know these new resources and introduce them to each other so they can, the synergies are just marvelous. So I'm so glad that you're with us today on Pilgrim Talks. The Pilgrim on the 405 is going to get back on the 405 and keep talking to CEOs and find out what's out there. Thanks a lot for being with us today. We look forward to next week when we'll once again be together on OC Talk Radio for Pilgrim Talks. Thank you.
You've been listening to the one and only Will Crist, the Pilgrim on the 405, right here on octalkradio.net.